Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist here in Louisville, Kentucky. And let me apologize up front. I called one of my moms to cancel a session this morning, and she's a cute little lady from New Zealand, and she said, "Oh, you're croaky." So I thought that was cute. And she apologized. I said, "Oh, no, it's appropriate. I'm croaky." So I've had a cold all week, and my voice is still funny. So I'm going to try to get through this hour, but apologize for my squeakiness.
Well, are you feeling better, though?
I feel okay. Not 100%, but
I can
better.
Tell you sound a little down, a little sick.
I'm feeling a little sick today. But anyway, I will get through it.
Well, I'm so glad you still opted to be on the show. I was wondering if you were going to need to bow out, and I will just talk myself silly today. Just jump in whenever you can, and I don't want you to overdo your voice. As a speech-language pathologist, let me tell you, talking is not good when you sound like that.
I know. You've been telling me all week. You know it's a hardship for me, though. I'd rather be croaky and talk than not talk.
I know. Well, and it's nearly the last week in September, which is when I usually have this, but I guess this year you have it instead of me, so there you go.
Well, there's always next week. I hope I'm better, and maybe you'll have it. I don't hope you have it, but I hope I'm better.
I hope you're better, too.
What's our subject for today, Ms. Laura?
Well, we are going to finish talking about apraxia and phonological disorders. We've been talking about this for the last several weeks. And today we're going to zip through the last couple of sections on this and pick up where we left off last week when we were talking about how to help your child with apraxia learn to say phrases and then move on to sentences. And last week we kind of left off with talking about how important signing is and bringing back out those initial signs that you used when your child was first learning to say some words, if you did this as a part of speech therapy and your speech pathologist believes, like Kate and I do, that signing really help children who are nonverbal move to being verbal, and especially when those children have verbal motor planning difficulties, meaning that they know what word they want to say, it just somehow short circuits between the time they get it from their little brain to their mouths. And again, signing helps those first words somehow pop out easier. So we talked about when a child is making the jump from single words to phrases, it's really hard for lots of children with apraxia because the hallmark of apraxia is that you have sequencing difficulties, either sequencing sounds into words and then especially sequencing those words into phrases. So how many times, Kate, do you have kids that kind of get stuck at that single word level and then getting them to phrases is a really big deal? Do you have that happen?
Absolutely, routinely. It is kind of goes with the diagnosis to me, you know. Sometimes parents don't understand it, and I'm not sure I fully understand it except to say it's really common for kids to struggle with getting from single words, even to use two very, very familiar words can sometimes be a big step.
Yeah, and the important thing is, as a parent or even as a therapist, you really don't have to always understand every single thing about a certain treatment principles for them to still work. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Or sometimes these things, you know, especially early in a career, you read about it and you think, I'm not quite sure how this happens or why this happens, but thank goodness that prerequisite knowledge is not required for the technique to be successful. So let's continue to talk about other ways besides signing. One thing that I try to do with these kids that are really ready to move on to phrases is pick a couple of core patterns for them to use, and again, that's so that they don't have to work so hard to change every single word every single time. And I do, again, want to stress that at some point you do want to work on variety and getting them to do lots of things, but if your child is not a kid who routinely talks in phrases yet, you really want to pick a couple of core patterns because, again, it's going to be easier for him to change one word at a time over several different phrases than starting completely from scratch every single time. And I think that makes sense just from kind of a simplistic viewpoint that it would be easier if I learned to use more with lots of different nouns or I learned to use lots of different nouns and stick please on the end then again, learning, you know, 20 new patterns. And again, those kids really need to hang on to that, that benefit of it becoming automatic. And the more they do it and the more they practice it and the more they say it, the more automatic it's going to be. So it's going to be much, much easier for them. And when it becomes easier, it's going to be lots easier for you to understand too. So usually with kids, some of the phrases or some of the patterns that I do, like I already said, more plus another noun or a noun plus please. More please is one that I think is really, really functional, and I love that because most of the children that I've seen in therapy are signing both more and please, and you can stick that together. And it's very useful for almost anything that a child would request. But some therapists really hate the idea of using so many of having so many requests without it being so specific, and they feel like kids kind of get stuck on more please. But I think for apraxic kids, it's really important to just kind of get them over the hump to using phrases, to use a really functional, very easy phrase that you can apply to lots of different situations, like more please. And again, you want to do it with the signs and with the words. You want to jump in on that, Kate?
Yeah, I guess I just would chime in and say, yeah, I agree. I don't really see that that getting stuck part is such an issue. I think it's better to give them those early successes and get them warmed up and let them practice with something they can do rather
right.
than setting the bar so high where it's something they can't do.
Right,
so
yeah.
I don't really see that that is a big problem, that they routinely get stuck like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, to do it for a few weeks or even, you know, a couple of months for a kid that's really had difficulty getting two words together, that's okay. And again, the more they use a little phrase like that, the easier that's going to be, and then you're going to build on their successes to be able to expand so that they can use other ones too. My plus a noun is another phrase that I pattern that I commonly use, and you know, we do that teasingly in therapy when they have a ball or something or a choo-choo train or a car, and I take it away from them and say, my car, and so many kids will pop out the no mine or my car as well after you do that. So that's one that I use a lot. Bye-bye with the name of a person or with the toy is another pattern that I use a lot. And again, I think we're talking about children who are just in the very initial parts of being able to move from single words to two-word phrases. And let me just interject. We talked about this some last week, or a lot actually last week, I think, is how do you know when your child is ready to move on to two-word phrases? And again, I feel like the best way to do that is to look at his single-word vocabulary that he uses on his own. And I feel like a child needs between 35 and 50 words before you can really start doing phrases. So I wanted to interject that for maybe someone who didn't listen to last week's show. And if some of these things that we're talking about this week don't make sense, go back and listen to last week's show first and then kind of move forward, because we sort of set the stage for all these techniques that we're talking about today. Last week, we're talking about when a child is ready and some of those other background things that you'll need so that this show makes sense.
I guess
all right.
I'll add that although I'm not a speech therapist, I play speech therapist a lot. And the one exception to that phrase, modeling a lot of phrases when your child is ready, I'd say at least from what I do, and I think you do too, Laura, sometimes I routinely, early on in therapy, do use some, an old speech therapist friend of mine used to call them frozen phrases. Like I always say, clean up, clean up. And kids sometimes will get those because
right.
they've heard them so many times. But when it's that really, really well-rehearsed frozen phrase, then we don't really think of it as a phrase because they're not taking two words and combining them on their own. They're really just, they learned it holistically. So
right.
that's the way they know it. So I was just going to stick that in there.
Yeah, and I agree with that too. And I think using a phrase like clean up early on, they're hearing it in music And that somehow makes it easier for lots of kids with motor planning problems to be able to do it too, because of the increased prosody that we've talked a lot about, that sing-song, that melody, that rhythm, that helps so many children be able to move to phrases as well. So that's why that works. And, you know, that's another kind of thing that lets me know when a kid is ready for phrases is when I hear them trying to sing clean up with me or something else that I've done just kind of routinely, and I start to hear some of those or some of those little pop-out phrases, and I think, aha, now we're ready. Let's try to go on and move on to some of those. So that's an important readiness skill as well. I don't think we talked about this last week, but it's something that is that I talk about all the time with parents, and I talk about it with other therapists too, because I think it's a real problem. When, and Kate, if we did talk about it, I want you to stop me so that we don't spend too much time on it. But a big mistake that many parents, and again, sometimes clinicians make, is that when they first start doing phrases, they break up the phrase into single words every single time they do the phrase. And so when they're trying to get their child to say more milk, they say more, say milk. And they don't get to the part where they're having them say more milk, and they're modeling it together and really expecting them to put it together. But that's how a parent thinks that they're working on phrases, is that they break it up all the time. And again, some kids may need that right at the beginning, but don't fool yourself that you're working on phrases if you're getting them to do it like that every single time, because really, when you think about it, that's still doing a single word. Do you have parents do that, Kate?
I do, yeah. It's not uncommon. And see, I would prefer, even if their approximations are really far off, that they at least give me the vowel sounds of, you know what I mean? So,
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then break it up and do a pretty more or a pretty milk. It's that phrase together that you want to get. And it is true that children with especially apraxia are going to make more errors or leave off more sounds or substitute more sounds as their utterance length increases. And again, that's one of the diagnostic features of apraxia. But you can't stay stuck at single words forever. So sometimes you have to give up a little bit of that articulatory accuracy and sacrifice some of that to bump them on up to phrases. And again, that's okay, because we want them to be conversational children, and they've got to get to the point that they can sequence 2- and 3-word phrases before they're ever able to going to be able to talk in real conversations with you in real sentences. So again, expect some of those errors to rear their ugly heads again. You know, maybe if your child left off lots of M's at the beginning, or when you were first teaching more, or they could never do please, it always ended up like E's, but now you've gotten a good P at the front, so at least it's P, and then it might have even morphed into P's. But when you put it with a phrase, you might hear them drop that P again or drop that ending sound, and that's okay. And that's a point well made, Kate, that we would rather them go ahead and make some of those errors but still get the concept of putting 2 words together rather than focus on every little nitpicky sound.
Right.
It's more important language-wise to go ahead and move to language, move to phrases, rather than staying at the point where you're kind of stuck at the single word level. And again, there are some therapists who would really disagree with me over that, but I think if we're looking at children from that language perspective, it is so much more important that they move on to phrases and move on to sentences rather than stay with single words until they're getting every single initial consonant and every single final consonant. So that's
right.
Important. And remembering when you're not to break it up all the time, even if you break it up and say, tell me more, now tell me milk, now tell me more milk. I don't even really do that with kids. I just say, more milk, you know, and just do every kind of prosodic change, or even maybe change my volume or do it with the signs without breaking it up, because, again, I don't want to sacrifice that we're really working on phrases, not single words.
Right. I mean, I would almost guarantee with kids I see that more often than not, the articulation or the intelligibility is going to suffer. I mean, you know,
right.
It's like, yeah, you know it's coming, but if you don't get them over that hump, then they really are stuck at single words. And sometimes they've gotten to a point where they're pretty comfortable there, you know.
Right.
It's like, yeah, they got the single words, and they don't necessarily embrace that. Nope, now you're going to tell me more milk or something close to that before you get it. So,
right. And I think lots of therapists that aren't speech pathologists make that mistake, gosh, for a long time. Our friends that are OTs or PTs or even psychologists sometimes are so naturalistic and really don't think that kids should be cued. And then that's when I go in and I'm the replacement therapist because they've all stayed at single words for a long, long time.
Hello?
Oh, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I think I accidentally muted myself. Sorry.
Yeah, you cut it out for a minute.
Sorry. No, my point was, I don't know how much of that you heard, but I think that's when I replace or go in, and that's when a lot of parents seem to make a change with therapists that I get called in on, is that the child really, they feel like that they're not making much progress, and it's because the therapist hasn't gone ahead and moved to phrases. You know, they've kind of stayed stuck at that single level. And, again, they did it, like you said, where the kid just kind of got used to being there and didn't really move them on. And lots of our friends who use a lot of the floor time approaches, because they don't give as many direct cues as we do, they end up there without even realizing it, you know, and they don't even realize why a kid's language isn't moving along. Well, it's that they haven't bumped them on up to phrases. And, again, there are a fair number of therapists who might do it too soon, that a child might get 5 or 10 words and then they start working on phrases. You've got to hit it kind of in the happy medium, where when kids are at about 50 words, that's when research tells us that phrases start to appear in typically developing language. So while everything isn't exactly the same with children with apraxia or children with a severe phonological disorder, you do want to look at those markers that we know about typical language development and those milestones and kind of start thinking, okay, this is where we need to hit. This is our direction. So
right.
Don't break up the phrases too long with single words.
And really, I mean, we're just, you know, extending our theory because, as we know, apraxic kids don't just really start using words independently. It's certainly not a variety of words the way typically developing kids do language-wise. So I
right.
think it kind of makes sense that they're probably not going to get phrases spontaneously either.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
And I have had a fair number of kids, I would say several a year, that I start to see that I'm not their first person that they've seen. And I'll say, how many single words does he have? And mom really might say, gosh, if I wrote them all down, he has probably 100 words or 75 words that I kind of understand that he uses all the time. But he just can't start to do phrases. And, again, a mom might not have even realized that that's the problem yet. They just somehow kind of feel like they're stuck. So that's one thing for a therapist to kind of keep in mind. Okay, if your child is having difficulty with phrases because of the number of syllables, one thing that I do is try to work with real words with repetitive or what we would call reduplicated syllables, like bye-bye mama, bye-bye dada, night-night mama, night-night dada, or, again, you're saying the same syllable twice, you know, and that we see that pattern a lot in early words of babies. You know, that if you looked at a 12-month-old's vocabulary, you're going to see a lot of those. I've already said, you know, mama, dada, night, night. Baba for bottle, or Kate, I can't think of any more. But, you know, the theory there is that they're using that same reduplicated pattern, and that's something that I do with apraxic kids too, is really use that, you know, bye-bye, choo-choo. They've got, it makes it a little bit easier for them to do the two-word phrase when those syllables are reduplicated like that. And then in my mind, when I'm thinking about apraxic kids, I think, gosh, if I've gotten them to do that, I've gotten them to do 4 syllables. And for some kids with verbal motor planning difficulties, that's a big deal to get that many syllables in a row, you know, that much connected speech. So that's something that I might try with kids, too, just to make it a little bit easier. Oh, one thing I meant to say last week, I wrote myself a note about it and I forgot. When we're talking about two-word phrases, sometimes parents and therapists will misclassify words like all done or thank you as a two-word phrase, and in my mind, those really aren't, because you're not, unless a child is using, let's back up. The theory is you're not going to count it as a two-word phrase unless you would use those words singly. And so unless a child was saying, all better, all mine, you know, using all in the context of another word, all really isn't considered a single word there. It's, in my mind, that's kind of a holistic phrase, meaning they've learned that phrase as one whole word. We're going to talk about holistic phrases in a minute. So, again, be careful when you're looking at your vocabulary list and thinking about that, too. While that's important that you want them to sequence all done, and that would be a word that I would try, too, for a kid with motor planning difficulties. Don't think about that as a two-word phrase, because I had a mom yesterday say, well, he says thank you. You know, that's two words. Yes, but no. So just kind of wanted to throw that in there. I don't think we've talked about that yet, have we?
I just kind of mentioned it at the beginning of this show, but, I mean, it's worth mentioning.
Oh, did you already say that?
Kind of. I was probably so croaky you couldn't understand me.
You did when you were saying,
I sound like a
chihuahua. Sorry. When you were saying they learned it holistically, and I wanted to give those specific examples. So sorry, I must have been reading or looking on to the next point when you were saying that. So sorry about that.
Those are the biggies that we do here, and our point is unless they're using those words in isolation with another word that, or even in isolation, like if they say thank you and then you were playing with them and they handed it to you and they said you, then I might say, oh, well, maybe. But
right,
normally, right. Though they don't take thank or you and they don't take all and done and use them in any other way, when you know,
right.
With only it's, that way. And
yeah,
with only that way, it's not a phrase.
Exactly. Now, more and more like a speech therapist every week, I tell
you. I know.
Okay. Before, I do want to talk about holistic phrases, but before we talk about that, let's talk about one of my very favorite techniques to get children that are having difficulty making, you know, going ahead and moving to phrases. One thing that kids might do is repeat the phrase, like if you're trying to get them to say more ball, they might say more or ball, ball. That's a really common mistake that kids make. And so if you have kids doing that, they really do need, I mean, that is a hallmark in my mind, too, of motor playing difficulty, you know, getting, moving from single words to phrases. So, and sometimes we even use that as a technique for if I can't get two words together at all. I really do spend a fair amount of time with kids saying a single word over and over. And we did talk about this last week, I think, where if you're playing on the slide and you're climbing up the ladder, you're going to say up, 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 up. And then as you're sliding, you say down, 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 down. So you can use a single word like that in practice. When you're labeling pictures in a book, you could use a single word in practice like that. Instead of counting the dogs, you could label dog, 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 dog. Or I do it all the time with my kids when I'm having snacks. You know, they are routinely wanting to look at the bags and see the cool pictures that the snack companies have put on there. And so I'll take that as an opportunity to go ahead and practice that sequencing with, like, looking at the bag of Oreos and saying, cookie, cookie, cookie. And sometimes you pause and a kid can blurt out cookie. And then sometimes you have them do the whole sequencing thing with you that they're pointing and they're labeling those pictures. And again, that sequencing practice, and some kids really need that in between step between single words and phrases so that they're using the same word several times in a row. Now, when you get to the point that you've done that a lot and they're really good at that and you really are ready to move on to phrases and they're just doing things like please, please, when you've modeled milk, please, you know that you really want to do get that second word. And so backward chaining is a technique that we talked about when we were talking about more difficult words, and you can use that again with moving with phrases, especially when the kid is doing the first part of the phrase or using that first word over and over. So the theory, again, with backward chaining is you practice the last part first, and then you chain the first word into that phrase. And so we talked about it previously with single words, that if your child was having trouble learning a word like Elmo, and maybe they said, well, LL's not a, kids usually say Momo when
right.
they're going to duplicate it like that. That's probably not the best example, but we're going to use that since I started going there. When, you know, and you're working on, you get them to say Mo, 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 Elmo, and somehow just practicing the last part of that word makes that easier for them to get the first part. I do it with Cookie all the time. I have them, if a kid is saying cuckoo, or a lot of times they're saying ka-ka for Cookie, we practice key, 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 and then Cookie, and they can get that second part of the word, or really sometimes it's the first part that they're missing. So that technique works either way, and it works equally as well for phrases, especially if a kid is doing the first part, the first word over and over. Instead of choo-choo go, they may say choo-choo, choo-choo, like they've just said choo-choo go, and they don't even realize that that's popped out twice. Practice that second word several times alone, and then go back and add the first word. You have a story about backward chaining, don't you, Kate?
Oh, I do. You're going to make me tell it. It wasn't for phrases. It was for a single word.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, but it was about cute little girl I see that I'm not sure she's apraxic, but she has some of those tendencies anyway. She's made great progress language-wise, but, boy, she's really difficult to understand now. And I'm getting better, and I think maybe she's getting a little bit clearer, but still, she's pretty hard. And I had shared with, she goes to a great little daycare, and I had shared with the teacher about backwards chaining. And the next week, the teacher said to me, "Hey, that really works." And I said,
"Yeah."
What? She said, "Oh, well, I tried that where you say the second part first, like pull, you know, and you got to repeat it, pull." And then she said, "Apple." And this little girl says, "Apple." But if you just say apple, she says, "Uh-oh." So.
Yeah. Yeah. Or some kids really will, you know, I've had that with kids that for apple might have just done pull forever, and you still can practice pull, 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 apple. And because you practice it that way, even if that's the way they first said it, somehow practicing it in that way neurologically helps that get easier. And that's, you know, I don't know if I gave this example when we talked about backward chaining before, but, you know, when you're trying to remember, say, a telephone number and somebody, you know, says my number is 299-6832, and you just say in your mind, 6832, 6832, 6832, because you've kind of stored that 299 part somewhere else, you know, and you kind of remember that part. That's the theory with this, is that if you practice the end part of it, it's going to make the you able to do the whole thing, and the beginning part will come easier. You know, heaven help us if a real neuroscientist ever calls and tries to really give the formal explanations for some of these things that we really boil down so that we can understand it. But again, backward chaining is very successful with those multisyllabic words that they can't seem to get, and with phrases, especially if they just keep leaving off the last word of the phrase, if they double that first word, again, like more, more, if you're trying to get them to say more candy or whatever.
Laura, you mentioned it. I always think it's so cute when kids do, and their parents, although sometimes I have parents look at me and the child like, you know, what's wrong? But kids oftentimes don't seem to really necessarily recognize that they're doing that. You know what I mean?
They don't.
They're looking at you like they said it, you know, ball please,
yeah.
And it's ball ball, you know.
Yeah.
And you're like,
no. Yeah, and we don't say that. You know,
yeah.
Usually we say, what happened to please?
Yeah.
You have to say ball please. But they don't get it. And I've told this story on this show so many times, but I'm going to tell it again. My sweet little friend Addison that I saw just for a short time that was in a little bit of Teach Me to Talk, but he was so sick the day that it was his turn to film. But he loved cheese balls, and he was a kid that had lots of single words and that we were trying to get phrases, and he always said cheese, cheese, or ball, ball. He could not get cheese ball, and his mom one time heard him on the baby monitor in his little crib practicing cheese ball, and she would hear him say it wrong, and then he would pause like, oh, I didn't say it, and then she would hear him say it again and again and again until he taught himself how to say cheese ball that way. Isn't that the cutest story?
It's adorable. Laura, I'm thinking of it, so I'm going to put it out here. you said if a neuroscientist wants to call and educate us, that would be great. But if a mom or a dad or a caregiver or a therapist wants to call, I'm going to give the number.
Oh, yeah. I haven't done that today.
I know. It's 1-718-766-4332.
And we would love to hear from you and any questions that you have about your child that might have apraxia and phonological disorders. We haven't talked about that as much. Again, I kind of paired it that way for the latest DVD that I've done. It's Teach Me to Talk with Apraxia and Phonological Disorders, and you can find out more information about that DVD at my website, teachmetotalk.com. When you get there, there's a little category selector up kind of in the top right-hand corner, and you can click on that, and then several different topics will come down. Click Apraxia. And go, and you can go to lots of different articles that I've written in the last year and a half about treating toddlers and young preschoolers with apraxia, and you can also find out information about ordering the DVD. And I think that order DVDs is a separate little category on that as well, but I did want to mention there's currently a coupon code for that DVD as well, and you just type in the word apraxia during the Google checkout process, and you'll save $15. So I wanted to put that in there as well. Okay, let's keep going with talking about other ways that we help children learn how to say phrases. I do like to use a child's strengths when we're working on that. So again, last week we spent a good 15 minutes talking about how we don't routinely use lots of color or number words for children. But if I have tried lots of different ways and children are really using lots of colors spontaneously on their own, that's the only time that I might actually work on using color words with phrases. I have had several kids in the past that are so stuck on colors by the time that I get them that, you know, when we're talking about something, we're looking at toys or we're looking at pictures in a book, they really might only tell me the color of something rather than labeling things as duck. They may look at it and say, yellow, and they're so proud of that little word. And I'm always thinking, oh, my gosh, please just say duck. So if I have a kid that really, that he's just totally into colors, and it does happen to be boys more often than not, don't you think, Kate?
It does seem like it, but, of course, we tend to see more boys, so maybe our perception is skewed. But to me, I'd say, yes, more boys.
Right, and so that's at a time that, you know, if I cannot get more please, more milk, bye-bye mama, I think, okay, or any of these other things that we are going to move on and talk about, that's a time that I really might think, okay, I'm going to have to use those dreaded color words and start really helping him add that second part on there and get that other noun with it. So that's something that you might want to use too. And again, using a child's strengths really applies to anything. If you know that a kid, your child is stuck on Thomas and all those darn trains, use the trains to get the two-word phrase. If you have a child that's really crazy about playing with her baby dolls, use the babies. You know, use whatever is most motivating to your child to help build those phrases in, because you, first of all, they're going to want to play with those longer, and secondly, you can probably come up with lots of other phrase combinations that maybe you haven't even thought of. And one other thing I do is really listen to what children are saying and words they're saying in close proximity to each other. If I hear a child say go and choo-choo within the same 10 seconds, you better believe I'm going to try to get the phrase go choo-choo. Or baby and night-night, I'm going to try night-night baby. So, again, listen to what single words your child is using on his own. Take their interest and try to do two-word phrase combinations in that context. That helps a lot. Okay, let's move on and talk about holistic phrases for real, since we've been hinting about this now for 30 minutes. But holistic phrases are phrases that children learn as one long word. And again, we've already talked about all done and thank you. Those aren't really phrases. Those are words that your child has kind of bumped together. And in his mind, all done, and in my mind too, is one long word. And so, again, I don't really target these kinds of phrases unless I'm not successful at getting other kind of phrase types or unless a child just naturally starts to say a lot of these. And Kate already mentioned cleanup. Now I am remembering that whole little conversation, Kate. Sorry about that.
That's right.
Cleanup. But other ones that they might do that I think about a lot and that I just kind of naturally say with kids would be, you know, I did it. I got it. You know, I'll say, where's your shoe? Right there. Again, those little phrases technically are 2 and 3 words, but children have grouped them together, and I like what your other speech pathologist friend called those frozen phrases. I call them holistic phrases, but again, they're phrases that children learn as one long word. Other ones that I think about with that are like, no way, come on, where'd it go, here you go. This one, you know, what do you want? That one. Usually it's that one. Again, those are some other kinds of phrases that you would think about using as
another biggie I hear is, where are you? Because I do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's, are you?
They put their hands
they
up.
They leave off the where.
Yeah.
Yeah, are you? Are you? Yeah, they've lifted those last couple of words. That's very cute. One thing that I know you say, and I say it all the time, is, oh, man, when something happens, when you've broken a toy or something hasn't worked out quite like you wanted when you're playing, you know, saying, oh, man.
It's cute when they get that one, too. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Certain things they pick up, I always think, oh, that's cute.
I know.
They're usually
yeah,
really animated when they do it, I guess. That's why.
I know, and I love it when they start doing that kind of feigned disappointment. Oh, man. You know, it's really fake, but it's so cute. See ya is another one that I think kids say. I'm always saying that to the children at the door, you know, bye-bye, and we've already blown kisses and stuff, and I'll do see ya. And a lot of kids will pick up on that one pretty quickly, too. And so, again, there in my mind, I know that those aren't really two-word phrases, but they've learned them as one long phrase, and again, sometimes that's a real way, a real inroad for you to start to get some sounds and syllable sequence together that are more like a phrase. And it's always interesting to me, Kate, when I have a child that starts to say lots of those, even on his own, but then I can't get something like more book or more juice. You know, they can do a lot of those, and we've had a couple of those kids like that this year, even that we've just shared or currently share, that started to do a lot of those holistic phrases. But then when you start to kind of analyze their language, they don't have many other novel phrases. It's just those core phrases that they've learned that way, and that's
right.
Always kind of interesting to me.
Sometimes it turns out that other people kind of inflate their skills because they hear a few of
right.
those and they think, oh, he's using phrases. And it's like, yeah, the same 4 phrases. That's it.
Yeah, like the public school clinicians who evaluate them and determine if they're eligible for services at 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I wasn't going there. I just said people.
I'm a little bitter about that. A little bitter when I have kids that so need speech, but they really fool even the speech pathologist because, like you said, in an hour they might say 4 different holistic phrases, and darn if the therapist isn't giving them credit for doing that with, you know, that they're consistently using phrases when nothing could be further from the truth. So I'm not really bashing any therapist per se. I'm just saying that's frustrating to me when that happens. So then I know that a child really, really, really needs to continue services, and he's not going to be able to because technically he, according to them, he used these 3 or 4 different little phrases in an assessment, and they automatically pass them on through.
Right, and if you're a parent listening and you're thinking, ding, 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 this sounds like my child, you know, just be aware that it's always a good idea to mention that. Like if your child's transitioning from early intervention to the school, don't be afraid to say, you know, I've recognized, or my therapist and I have recognized that really all of his phrases are the same phrases. He really doesn't have any variety if that's the case, because sometimes I think they do just kind of hear them and go, check, 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 got that. And really,
right.
Technically, that really shouldn't qualify as using novel phrases routinely at all. But don't be afraid to mention, you know,
Right.
So, because I think if they're alerted to it, then they'll really stop and listen. And, they're like everybody else. They're busy. They've got to evaluate however many kids. And for them to be reminded or to be alerted to that is a good thing. So if you're going through the transition process, speak up.
Yeah, or if you're a therapist and you're writing your discharge summary or the report that is the one that would get sent on with the child to in the transition process for the school system therapist to be reading, mention that. Say the only time you use these phrases are with holistic phrases or even carrier phrases, which is the next thing that we're going to talk about. Once a child has lots of two-word combinations, imitated or spontaneously, then you want to kind of bump them on up to three-word phrases, and the best way to do that is with what we call carrier phrases, and that's because the first couple of words of these kinds of phrases are always the same. I want is the biggest one that I can think of. I want cookies, I want shoes, I want milk, I want swing, I want go. You can put a noun or a verb right there, and it really, again, sometimes I think, oh, this kid doesn't get that, in his mind that's a little two-word phrase. It's not really I and want as separate words, but it is a starting place for phrases, and so you do want to work on some of those. Some of my favorite ones, we've already talked about I want. If I have a kid that can't do want for whatever reason, I switch to need, and sometimes I think that phrase is easier to say, I need rather than I want, so you might try that. Ones that other therapists do a lot are I see. Kate, I think you do I see a lot, don't you?
Yeah, usually when kids are kind of stuck on I want.
Yeah. Like, oh, my gosh, let's move on.
Yeah. Let's mix this up a little bit. But, yeah, I do I see.
Yeah, I do that one too. And I noticed that because on the kids that we share, they'll start to blurt out, I see, I see, I see. And I think, oh, you sound like Kate.
Yeah.
And I say, look, 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 like that. So it's funny to me to always kind of hear your version of that with kids. So that's cute. Other things that we do, that's whatever or it's whatever. And, again, you're not getting very much information with that's or it's because that really is just a label, and it's so funny, the kids, I can almost predict which kids are really going to pick that up. They're almost always kids that I'm worried about auditory processing as well, and they do really pick up on those little phrases. That's a tree, that's a car, it's a baby, it's a whatever. I remember our little guy, Kate, that we shared several years ago that thought Santa's name was It's Santa because that's how his mom said it the very first time. It's Santa! And so sometimes if you asked him, who's that, It's Santa made sense. But then when you would say, what do you want to play with? It's Santa! That didn't quite make sense. So, but for some kids, that really is the way they're leeway into phrases is that they start with lots of these carrier phrases or holistic phrases, and that's okay too. Just know in your mind that to them it probably is one long word, but it is important. Other ones that I do, give me, a lot of kids will do give me, that's one word to them. Give me more, give me cookies, give me apples. I haven't had a gimme kid in a long time. It's cute. The kids that get that are usually the kids that do the gimme fingers, that hold their hands out and bring their little fingers into their hands. So those, when I see kids using that gesture a lot, I work on give me with that.
Yeah, it always kind of cues me too. And I haven't had that in a little while either, the gimme fingers.
Yeah, but I always think, gosh, that's one that I know that we're going to get because it's a concept that they get already.
Right.
Back to the I thing with the kids, the I want kids that get kind of stuck there. With those kids, I really do encourage their moms to put I with other verbs. I have a couple little girls right now, the same little girls that were doing those darn H's at the beginning of every word. Ball is hall or... they just substituted initial H at the beginning of every or of lots of different words. But both these little girls right now have gotten I, and we're trying to work on I with different verbs rather than just I want. I pull, I hold, or I go, you know, just putting I at the beginning of a phrase. Now, the pronoun I like that, though, let's just talk about this really quickly. In typically developing language, sometimes isn't mastered until closer to 2.5. So, again, you're going to want to teach it, and you're going to want to use it. Sometimes I'll teach I, and I'll come back a week or two later, and the kid has put me in that in the place of I, and you think, oh, no, they're trying to use me incorrectly, and again, we're not going to get too hung up on grammar or that kind of thing. It's lots of two-year-old children say, you know, me do it, or me go, me eat, rather than I, and that's okay. I wouldn't really teach it that way, per se, but it's certainly okay if your child switches that I to me, and that tells me that they're just kind of working through that whole pronoun thing. So, again, not a big deal. We haven't talked about when we teach the with I want using, we've talked about using signs, but again, a lot of speech pathologists would cringe at this trick, but we use it all the time, Kate, when we point to our eyes that we see with to cue the word I, to start with I at the beginning of a sentence. That works like a charm for lots of children because I get that that's called an I. And again, some speech pathologists would really want you to use the American Sign Language version and point to your chest or even stick up your pinky finger is the real sign for
which
I.
Which is hard for me to do, let alone a two-year-old. I know.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I just go for what seems to work, and with lots of toddlers, pointing to your real eye cues that word for them. So that's okay to use it in that way, too. You'll see that on the DVD.
And, I mean, almost 100% of the time, when they get there, when they've got it, they're going to say, I want choo-choo, I want choo-choo. So
right, and they're going to stop pointing out their eyes. Yeah.
Right.
And usually they never do it. It's just that I'm cueing the word with that
right.
with that sign. So, yeah. So that's okay. I have had a fair number of kids that try to touch their own eyes when they say that, and I do think, oh, you know, don't get your little finger right there. Anyway, just a little side note. Another thing I do with children, as long as we're talking about troubleshooting phrases, is that sometimes kids can't say a phrase alone, but they can say it together with me. They'll do it, and we call this teaching phrases in unison. And it's always interesting to me how I always know that this technique might work better for a kid is if he tries to finish or jump in when I'm modeling what phrase for him to say. He'll kind of jump in and say that last word with me. If we're working on I want fish and he gets fish, I think, okay, let me just back up and say, let's say this together. And so that works out really, really well. On the DVD, Teach Me to Talk with Apraxia and Phonological Disorders, there's so many great examples with my little friend Max with that, because with him doing phrases in unison. He cannot do it by himself, but boy, I say, let's say that together, and he would get it every single time. And he did move on from that, but that was one way for him to really make that transition. And for him, two-word phrases he could do pretty well, but trying to get that third and fourth word for a longer phrase or a sentence, unison was really, really an important strategy for him. And his mom started using it too, and it kind of helped him get over the hump. I don't know if you do lots of unison stuff, Kate.
I do it sometimes. And again, like you said, they kind of tell you they're going to go there when they start chiming in at the end of your phrase. I don't know
yeah.
if I've been as consciously aware of it, but I have had a number of kids that I realized, and I'll say, do it with me. You know, you
yeah.
do it with me.
And you can do it together. You know, I see dogs, or I want cookies, whatever you're saying right there. It does help them be able to do it together. And let's talk about with phrases what the apraxia experts and even what lots of language experts tell us. So many children at this phase of language development really need what we call mass practice, meaning that they need lots of opportunities to say the same phrase over and over and over. And so you do have to have a little bit of forethought there and so that you can incorporate that kind of practice into play. You can't really have a two-year-old or a three-year-old sit and drill the same phrase over and over and over without a purpose, but you can work it into play. And we've talked about requesting a lot, that if you're working on a carrier phrase like I want candy, you know, you have 25 pieces of candy, or, you know, I want cookies. You don't sit there and give them 15 cookies at one time. You break even one little cookie in half and have them ask for cookies using I want cookie, I want cookie, I want cookie, I want cookie, so that, you know, until they've eaten all 10 of those cookies and they've gotten that practice. And again, it's been in a functional way. You've set it up like that. It's not boring like flashcards, or they're just doing the same quote unquote drill over and over. You've made that meaningful for them, and you've made it fun because they're getting cookies, and you're, again, not being boring with this. You're giving them opportunities to have something really happen, but they need that drill or that math practice, again, to make these words automatic. So you want to think about that in play. On the DVD, I have a little boy, my same little friend Max, and I think we're cleaning up swords from the pop-up pirate game. And every time that we would clean up the sword, we would say, you know, and there were like 10 or 15 little swords of that game. He was, I think he was saying sword in box or all done sword or something like that. But you have them say that same phrase over and over and over again. And you're cueing the sounds or cueing the words as you're doing that. But again, it's what we would call mass practice, because you're taking the same set of words, the same phrase, and you're saying it over and over and over again. And again, the theory is so that that becomes automatic and overlearned. So you want to set up those situations to be able to do that. And again, not with something stupid like flashcards or worksheets. You're doing it in play, and you're making it fun and an age-appropriate activity.
And Laura, you've taught me over the years that cleanup can be a great time for those things, because as much as they initially love the toy, a lot of kids, you know, they've played with it 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. They're done. They want to move on. They know you have other cool things. And using that cleanup is good, because there's not really much in between. They can just say it and say it and say it and say it, and they know the payoff is they get the next cool toy. So
right. And so I never clean up a toy by myself in therapy. I mean, I might really early on, really with a kid who kind of needs a break or who is so attention challenged that I can't get him to do it, but I nearly always have children participate in cleanup time. So if you're working on phrases and you've done a 9-piece puzzle, guess what? He gets to say bye-bye choo-choo, bye-bye boat, bye-bye airplane, bye-bye truck, bye-bye whatever all those pieces have been. You know, he's got to say bye-bye to that. And so that might be a way that you work in phrases for that. If you're cleaning up from playing with dolls, you know, you're going to say night-night to the first baby and then night-night to the second baby. And even though it doesn't make too much sense, you're going to say night-night bottle, night-night milk, night-night juice, night-night diaper, night-night, you know, again, you're practicing that two-word phrase, and you're doing it in a way that's age-appropriate and that makes some sense, at least in some kind of way, with the kid, because they're having to put it away. All done is something that I do with kids like that, and I love the phrase clean up for that, Kate, for kids that are trying to get over that hump from 2 to 3 words, you know, clean up juice, clean up milk, clean up fork, clean up spoon, clean up bowl. Again, they probably think clean up is one word. That's a holistic little phrase to them, but we are getting that second part in there, and in my mind, helping move toward that 3 and 4 word level. And for kids who are good at, like, I want that, I try to stick another word on the end of that. And so they have to tell me, you know, in a context where they're requesting things, I want that, or, you know, then they start to say, I want that one. Yeah. And what you're going to want to do then is expand that little phrase so that you're having them tell you specifically which thing they want. You know, I want that car, I want that truck, I want that ball, I want that whatever. So they've learned that little phrase, that carrier phrase, I want that. So you want to make that a little harder and add that extra word on the end. And again, cleanup time is a great way to do that.
Sometimes I feel like that's the best practice, you know, because
it is.
Out, they're playing with it, which is what you want them to do, but there's a lot of interruption, you know, but then clean up, boy, they're right with you, and it's a great time.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, kids can't get through the whole darn thing, and I might let them do 3 or 4 where we're really saying bye-bye, whatever, and then we hurriedly just kind of clean up the rest of them. And if they're first starting to do phrases, I might let them kind of slide with every other one insisting that they do the whole phrase, but I do feel like it's pretty darn successful, like getting lots of that mass practice in a row like that. And I use it that way almost, you know, every session with kids. Okay, let's hurriedly talk about these last two things so that we can finish this series on apraxia and phonological disorders. We talked about this a little bit with backward chaining, but using the what we would say the build up or the breakdown method with kids. If they've not been able to do, I want more cookies, you know, you could have them say more cookies and then add the I want more cookies. Again, that would kind of be like backward chaining there. So, or for kids who just give you single words, you're going to build it up so that they're saying cookies, and you're going to have them say more cookies, and then you're going to build it up even more with I want more cookies. And I think I explained this a little, well, a second ago when I said the breakdown method. That would be for a child who maybe left off, if you're trying to get them to say I want more juice and they just say I juice, you're going to need to break that down and have them do the way that we just talked about, you know, more juice, want more juice, I want more juice, and then the whole darn, say the whole darn thing again. That's also important for children who are working on articulation or those speech sounds. Say that you're working on the initial k sound for candy. You might have them say the whole phrase, I want more candy, and then take the word candy out and practice that with your initial k and then stick it back in that sentence. So that would kind of be a variation of build up, break down. Does that make sense, Kate?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah, and then the last thing that I want to talk about when we're at this phase of language development is so many parents sometimes will take a kid that's using lots of jargon or unintelligible phrase length or sentence length utterances, and they think that they're doing, that they have to be saying whole sentences. And it's just that they have the sounds in the wrong places when really they're using lots of jargon. Have you had that happen a lot, Kate, where they think they're, where a parent might think that they're talking in sentences, but they don't ever understand what they're saying?
Yeah, sometimes. And the opposite can be true, too. They really are trying to say things, and parents don't catch any of it, but yeah.
Yeah, but how you know that it's jargon? And have we talked about jargon in the apraxia series? Have we already talked about this? As I'm saying it, I think we might have already talked about it. Is that the way that you know that if it's real words or if it's jargon? Usually, if there's adult-like prosody and inflection, but no consistency in the sequence of the sounds, it's likely jargon. Or if it's your famous thing, Kate, digga, 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 probably isn't a real word. It's kind of a self-stimulatory utterance, which, again, is a little bit different than jargon. But, you know, don't be fooled. Either way, if you feel like your child is doing lots of jargon into thinking, oh, gosh, he's ready to talk in sentences, let me, if you're not hearing lots and lots of different single words and in context, he's probably not doing lots of sentences. It's probably jargon. I'm not sure I'm explaining that very well today, but if we need to take another step at that on another day, we will.
Okay.
All right. One last thing with apraxia and phonological disorders, too, is the research tells us that oral motor exercises are not, according to research, successful in helping children learn to speak more clearly, and lots of speech pathologists really hang on to those oral motor exercises as a way to help children become more coordinated. And again, all the current research is telling us that if you want to work on speech, you need to work on talking. And if you want to work on sounds, it better be in the context of talking and of real words and not just mouth movements and tongue movements. Now, that's totally different than saying, look, I want you to put your lips together for p, and then getting that P sound right into a word. But just doing lots of repetitive, wiggle your tongue like this or puff up your cheeks like that, you know, usually you work on blowing and sucking, all that you're going to get are kids who blow and suck better. It doesn't necessarily translate to their speech being clearer. So I just wanted you to hear that little point. And I've got a couple different articles with some nice back and forth discussion that lots of speech pathologists chimed in on last year when we talked about this. And that's under oral motor exercises, why science says they don't work, on my website at teachmetotalk.com. That is different for children who have really definable or weakness that's totally obvious in their faces, meaning that they drool a lot or they always have their mouths open with their tongues out. You know, those kids truly, truly, truly have lots of low tone, and their feeding will be disrupted as well. And so for those kids, it does seem like oral motor exercises are more effective, but not necessarily just for a kid that's apraxic. And I think our OT friends really try to do a lot of oral motor exercises, and they think they're helping motor planning with speech, but again, research isn't really proving that right now, so I just want to caution you with that. Kate, can you think of anything else we need to say about apraxia and phonological disorders?
The only thing that I would add for a parent really working on this at home in the trenches, and Laura, you kind of said it, but it's something I routinely have to remind myself of, even after all these years of doing it, is to remember, and I'm not modeling one thing right now because I'm just on my last little shred of voice, but is to really, really remind yourself to use that real sing-songy pattern. And Laura, model something. Say it the way most parents would say, eat more cookies, and then say it the way you would say it so that they hear the difference.
Parents would say you want to eat more cookies. Eat more cookies. And I would say, like a question, you want me to model it like a question or like I would have a kid say it? If I'm saying it to a kid, I'm saying, you want to eat more cookies? Like I'm asking him, and then when he's telling me, I would have him say, more cookies or eat more cookies. So, again, it's that real melodic, real sing-songy, not just eat more cookies, which is
right.
Maybe how a dad would say it. I was coming in, and I'm saying, get him to say something for you. Ask him to request. Eat more cookies. You know, no. I'm saying, you want to eat more cookies? Tell me, more cookies.
Yeah. And
so, again, yeah.
And do I even begin to understand why it works? Not really. But I do know that it works. And I think that's something that parents really, really, really have to, well, I know that I have to continue to remind myself of that. And I think parents hear it when we do it, and they think, oh, yeah, but then as the day wears on or the situation changes, they don't remind themselves to continue to use it, and it just really, really helps a child.
Yeah, it totally does. And, you know, sometimes I do it so instinctively that I don't even realize that I haven't told a parent to do that per se. Or sometimes, again, it just comes – really, that's how I talk to kids, and I think that's how I talk to kids before I even realized that's how I was supposed to talk to kids to make it easier for them to do phrases. And
Laura,
so
that's just how you talk because you're from Mississippi.
I'm sure my mom is rolling on the floor now.
That's the way you talk to adults, I might add.
Sometimes I really do have to kind of pull that back, or my kids will say, please don't use your therapy voice with me. And I really crack up laughing then, but really that melodic, prosodic modeling of those ways to say that does help with motor planning. And so you do want to do that. And again, one of the diagnostic characteristics that we talked about for children with apraxia is that their speech sounds choppy and monotone. And so you have to almost overdo it as a mom or as a therapist working with them so that you are really, really sing-songy the whole time to target that. So, again, that's a point that I'm so glad that you brought up again because it's something that I just kind of think, that's a given. So,
well, it's
I'm,
really,
I'm
really,
you,
really basic, but I think it's really, really, really critical. So,
right.
And I do sometimes, depending on my mood, and certainly when I sound like this, I don't think I would even pretend to do it, but it just seems to really, really work, you know, and I think sometimes, and I don't know the neuroscience behind it, but it's kind of like when you hear a song, you know the words, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're using that sing-songy pattern, the words come more easily, not easy, but more easily for kids who are struggling with apraxia. So just keep that in your little bag of tricks to remember to sing, song, sing. Pretend you're all from Mississippi. And
hey, stop making fun of me. I think it's crossed
the
line.
No, I love your accent. I think you have a beautiful accent. But for we northerners, it is not a natural thing to do that. We're, you know, we tend to chop our words, and it's not sing-songy and pretty. So And I'll slip out of it sometimes, you know, even in a session, and I'll think, oh, yeah, you know, get back to the sing-song pattern because that makes it so much easier for them.
It really does. And sometimes I'll kind of slip out of it too, or I think that's how lots of moms realize when I'm talking to their kids versus when I'm talking to them. Because, you know, when I'm walking in going, hi, how are you? I'm really talking to the kid, and the mom will jump in and go, I'm fine. And I think, oh, that's so funny. So anyway, little laugh for the day for probably just you and me, but oh well.
That's all right.
That's all right. Okay. I haven't talked to you about this yet, but I'm going to go ahead and say this. We are not going to have a show next week, but we'll pick back up in 2 weeks from today, which I think will be October 8th. I'm really worried about my cell phone coverage. You know, next week I'm going to be driving during showtime to go with my little college reunion with my friends. And so I want to not have a show next week, and then we'll pick back up in 2 weeks.
And I think we're going to have a guest that day.
Yeah, that'll be great. I'm excited about that. Do you want to go ahead and announce that, or do you want to just save that?
I guess I'll announce it. It's probably, like you said, it's probably just for you and me and maybe your mom, our number one fan. but we're going to have Jill Smith, who is, I hope I'm right, I think it's called the Autism Resource Center, which is actually in southern Indiana. But she knows a lot about autism and has lots of wonderful resources for people, and so we'll talk about some of the specifics that she has and also just things that are, you know, generally available out there for kids who have sensory issues or kids who are on the spectrum or whatever.
Right, so get your pen and piece of paper when we're having that show, because I'm sure you're going to want to take lots of notes if you are a parent with a child with autism or even red flags for autism, or if you're a therapist and like to share resources with parents. So you're going to definitely want to tune into that show and, again, take some notes, because I know she's just going to be full of information.
Right.
All right. So we'll meet again in 2 weeks. Thanks. Have a great week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.